Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies. Earlier this week, ACEC released our latest private industry brief, which provides practical detailed information and targeted market insights on key AE private sectors. This issue is the 2021 mid-year economic outlook update and overflows with data and insights about the current state and future prospects of the national economy and the engineering industry. I encourage you to read the report. It's available for free download on the ACEC website, and there's a link in the show notes. To dive a little deeper into the numbers and analysis, Aaron McLaughlin, ACEC Vice President of Private Market Resources, joins us on the program. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Jerry.
So one of the eye-popping numbers from the brief is that the National Association of Business Economics is forecasting 8.5% annualized growth in the second half of 2021. This is a huge jump from earlier forecasts. What drove that recalculation?
Well, I think what really drove it was folks getting vaccinated and getting their vaccines and getting back out into the public, so to speak. So, you know, in the second quarter of last year, in 2020, GDP declined 31.4%. So, you know, it has sort of come up certainly dramatically since then. But as those who follow sort of economic news know, you know, people are just getting back to normal now. And hopefully the Delta virus, you know, will not impede that. But about 70% of our economy is based on consumer spending. And so the path of the virus and folks' comfort levels really does drive that GDP number. So it really is reflective of people, you know, feeling comfortable going out. It's summer, spending, going on vacation, eating out in restaurants, and sort of doing all of those things that we did not do during the dark days of the pandemic.
And as you mentioned, the Delta variant, and do you see that as potentially causing a second wave of that might put a damper on the forecast?
It could. So we follow the NABE, as you said, the National Association for Business Economics. They do a panel. It's 49 forecasters. And that's really why I like it, because it's not one person's opinion or one company's opinion, but it's a whole bunch of folks' opinions. And, you know, generally their biggest downside risks to the economy over the last year and a half have been around the vaccine, the spread of, you know, earlier on the spread of COVID, and now possibly, you know, a variant impacting us. But, you know, so far it seems that our vaccine is protecting us from the variant. And so as long as we don't see that spike, we should be able to sort of continue with the same level of growth and activity that we've had, you know, so far this year.
And as I recall from your brief, one of the upside risks, I've always liked that, the upside risk, is the infrastructure package.
Yes.
Getting passed. What's
yeah. That? So NABE, when they survey their panel, you know, they ask, what's the biggest upside risk? And upside risk basically means, you know, what could most positively impact the economy? And, you know, they give a bunch of choices, and infrastructure spending is always one of the choices, but it's usually only gets, you know, a 5% of people saying that that would be the most positively impactful action for the economy. Well, this time it actually got 21% of the panel said infrastructure spending, and it tied for large stimulus for 21 additional percent. So, you know, that's just really interesting. And for us, of course, as an industry, as an association, it's a great selling point, you know, to the wider policymakers and the wider, you know, influencers in the US and worldwide, that, you know, we're at a point where these macroeconomic forecasters think that infrastructure spending would have the greatest impact on our economy, and frankly, stimulus spending in general. So, you know, it's very exciting. It's something I know that we've been promoting and talking about for a long time. So, you know, fingers crossed that we actually do see an infrastructure package that results in the kind of growth that's sort of forecasted in the report.
And even, I mean, looking forward to some significant growth, engineering has actually done very well recently.
It has. Yeah.
So, can we talk about that?
Yeah. So, so we track the census, which tracks all sorts of things beyond what we think of the census as tracking. Tracks does a quarterly services survey where they track, you know, our NAICS code and how the revenues for architecture and engineering firms are doing. So last year, and we've been monitoring this very closely, last year we declined about 11%, and we're sort of flat during most of last year. And then we had our first rise in the first quarter of this year, and we rose 7.8% in Q1. That's the latest quarter that we have data for. So that's very exciting. You know, we're up almost 8% after declining 11% last year. So so that's really good news for our industry that, you know, this, the spending and the engagement of architecture and engineering firms has resumed. And so, you know, this is very different than previous recessions. You know, when we look at this sort of data point back for many years after our recession last time, it took years for us to really grow. We remained very flat. So this is just a different kind of recession. And so to see that kind of growth, you know, really 1 year later is very encouraging.
And then when you layer the infrastructure package on top of that, it should continue on in the coming quarters, I would imagine. I guess one sort of potential dark cloud on the horizon has been inflation, which has been sort of creeping up at times. In fact, in your report, you show that the price index for construction materials rose 17% year over year in May.
Right.
And so how's that going to play out with all this?
Well, for our member firms, obviously, that are working closely with our clients, they know that our clients are really, really concerned with that. Cost estimates, you know, that we work with construction teams to prepare, you know, may not be playing out the way that we thought they were. And the price of lumber in particular has gone up very, very much over the last year and a half. And a lot of that is due to the boom in single family residential, and of course the price of steel as well. So, you know, that's the producer price index, and that did show a 17% rise in May of 2021 over May of 2020. Now, what's really interesting, just in the last few days, it's being reported in the business media that lumber prices have started to decline and stabilize. So this is very encouraging because it means that, you know, some of our, especially for land development clients, maybe some of our home building clients won't feel so constrained, or they'll have some more predictability and be able to continue on and expand their projects. And it will just sort of, you know, give us some more certainty. However, steel prices are still on the rise, and it will be interesting to see if an infrastructure bill package, you know, does pass, how the price of steel is impacted.
One of the segments that I found most interesting in the brief was your report on the use of alternative and high frequency data in economic forecasting.
Yeah.
Would you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a nerd, so I think this is really interesting. And so, you know, in the last recession, everybody wasn't walking around with an iPhone or, you know, or a smartphone, and we didn't have sensors everywhere. And so now the world is just monitored much differently than it was before. And so it's been very, very interesting to sort of follow this and watch how these, what are called alternative or high frequency data, is being used by economists and policymakers to gauge how we're doing. So yeah, I wrote an article about it, and I actually featured the mobility trends index from Apple. And so that's something that anyone, you know, any person with internet access can go look at. I included the link, and you can type in any city in the US, any major city, and you can see how many people, you know, going back since before the pandemic, how many people are taking transit now versus before, or how many people are walking or driving now versus before. And really, you know, this is helping economists gauge, you know, on a day-to-day basis, are people returning to work? Are people getting back on the metro? You know, and that's just very interesting, again, because we're in an economy that's about 70% consumer spending, you know, to understand, you know, are people spending money in the same way they did before? And, you know, there's other indexes that are used. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of the Open Table Index, you know, and whoever thought that, an online reservation system would become an economic index, but it is, you know, it enables folks that follow that. And again, it's available to anyone to check it, to see, you know, what cities and what countries even are opening back up. Are people, what kind of restaurants people are dining in? Are people going back to the central cities where offices were closed, where many restaurants unfortunately have had to close, and that kind of a thing. So it's just really, and also of course there's tax consequences to how people spend their money, and that tax money helps fund infrastructure and, you know, helps private commercial real estate developers decide what to develop. So being able to track this, you know, right down from the consumer level, even to business travelers, are they back flying? Are they back staying in hotels? So it is very, very interesting. And it's interesting that almost anyone can sort of track this stuff just to, for their own information as well.
I remember way back when, before all this, when we used to wait to hear what the results were from the cardboard index, you know, people using cardboard for sending right. boxes. And that was as advanced as we got.
Yeah.
So one of the staples of your publication is the market sector outlooks, in which you forecast growth or even decline in five private market sectors. So let's just look at a few of them. The first off, the one that jumped out at me was the communication sector, which is expected to grow by 50% through 2025. What's behind that?
Well, this is really interesting. We actually did a special brief last year, which I think is still pretty relevant. Although if the infrastructure bill passes, we will go ahead and update that brief. But communication, which includes broadband, data centers, that kind of thing, is really considered to be the leading growth market over the next few years. And there is, you know, we work with FMI to source some of this data that's included in the brief, but you know, it's not a big market. So growing by 50% over the next 5 or 6 years isn't, you know, trillions of dollars, but it is a market that will go probably from about $23 billion this year to about $34 billion in 2025. And really the reason for this is that, especially during the pandemic, you know, we realized that this country needs to be connected in a way that it's not connected. You know, we have people that want to work from home and they need a reliable internet connection. We had remote learning, we have telehealth appointments, and you know, people also streaming a lot of entertainment that maybe they didn't some years ago. So, you know, communication and broadband as infrastructure has become increasingly accepted by policymakers. So any infrastructure package, I think of the three various, you know, the Republican, the Biden plan, and the bipartisan plan do include money for broadband. That's pretty extensive. And it's really about connecting, you know, especially in rural communities in the US, areas that have not been connected. And this is a private market because most likely those kinds of connections will be done by local utilities, including, you know, electric cooperatives that sort of electrified rural America 100 or so years ago. And it will be a very interesting market for our members. It was also the highlight of last year's fall conference panel that we did virtually. So I encourage people to check out the brief and to, you know, connect with me if they have any other questions on that. And this is something we're definitely going to monitor very closely over the next few months. And whichever infrastructure bill passes, we'll give it a really hard look and communicate to our members of how that money is going to trickle down, which will be interesting and new compared to other utilities.
And a long time utility is water, and mm-hmm. that's another area that you expect to see some growth, both in water supply and wastewater.
Right.
Why do you expect to see a big growth there?
So yes, we do predict quite a bit of growth, sort of wastewater about 39%, water supply about 46%. And I would attribute this to two main factors that are sort of being discussed currently. One is in the Biden plan and in quite a few of the infrastructure plans, There is the proposal to replace every lead pipe in America. So this is, they would take a great deal of money to do that, a great deal of work. And so, you know, that is, that's a huge part of it. And then secondly, which I know we're going to chat about and is featured in the report, is, you know, we had a housing boom, you know, especially a single family housing boom, and these new houses need, you know, water connections. And so the combination of replacing the old and then building the new and getting water connections out to folks' houses, you know, could produce a lot of work. And then lastly is we have a water shortage in the western part of the US. We have drought conditions, you know, and these are problems that obviously are not going to be solved overnight. And, you know, but we're going to have to advance, you know, and just thinking back to our awards for excellence, our engineering awards that we had recently, you know, some member firms are doing such great work in this area. And, you know, that's work that also needs to be continued to be funded and be done so that we can have, you know, access to water throughout the US.
You mentioned the single family residential market. I'd be remiss if we didn't touch on that, because that's been one of the strongest markets over the past couple, basically since mid last year. What's behind that acceleration, and how sustainable is it?
Yeah, it is really, really a hot topic, you know, for our land development folks. And of course, what I call our member firms that do community infrastructure, the design, you know, as we just talked about, those water systems or design K-12, you know, sort of to feed into those single family residential neighborhoods is really important. So, you know, a lot of this started before the pandemic, and it's really the result of millennials. The oldest millennials are turning 40 this year. I know. Jerry and I are a little older than the millennials. So, but yeah, the oldest millennials are turning 40, and they are just at that age where they are buying houses or they are buying bigger houses. And, you know, the bigger houses probably really came into focus if they were sitting at home with their kids and their partners having to remote learn and work. And so we're seeing that, and it's a larger generation. So, you know, that connected to low interest rates and is really just spurring this, you know, growth in residential. You know, we also have an affordable housing crisis in the US. So with the makeup of that residential, you know, is something that's always needing to be scrutinized a little bit. But regardless, and I detailed this in the report, in May 2021, there was a 46.1% growth in single family design and construction compared to May of 2020. So it's just a really, really big surge, you know, and that is why we're in part why we're seeing those lumber shortages. And so, you know, is it sustainable? Probably not, you know, because that is just such a rapid growth. However, is it a bubble? You know, probably not, because we have a population that needs homes. And so, you know, the need for the residential is going to continue to be there.
Well, great. I think that's probably a good place to end. Appreciate your taking the time to talk with us about this.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies. Thanks for listening.